This is Chuck Gomes, and this is the Policy and Implementation Working Group call on Wednesday, the 10th of December, 2014. Welcome to everyone on the call. Is there anyone who is not in that is on the call but not in Adobe Connect? Would you speak up so that I know?
And Chuck, this is Terry. I do need to start with a little roll call.
Okay. All right. I'll turn that over to you right now.
Thank you, Chuck. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the Policy and Implementation Working Group call on the 10th of December, 2014. On the call today, we have Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Klaus Stahl, Alan Greenberg, Greg Shatton, Chuck Gomes, and Stephanie Perrin. We have apologies from Alivi Kwame, Avery Doria, Ann Aikman-Scalise, and J. Scott Evans. From staff, we have Marika Koning, Amy Bivens, Barry Cobb, Steve Chan, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Chuck.
Thank you very much. Chuck speaking again. And any updates to statements of interest? Okay. Any comments or suggestions on the agenda? Noting that I'm going to insert a couple things at the beginning, but they're very brief. Okay. The first thing I wanted to insert in there is that I'm going to take the prerogative of chair, although I'm open to people complaining if you want to set a deadline for next Tuesday to the 16th, the day before our next call, for any major comments or edits to the three processes. They've all been out there, the input process, the least amount of time, but the other two for quite a long time. And so if anybody has any more significant edits or comments on any elements of the processes, please have them in by next Tuesday on the list. And the reason for that is we really, Marika has a target of the 22nd for a first initial draft of our initial report that is due to be published on the 19th of January, but we'll have a lot of work to do after that initial version to get to the 19th of January. So we need to keep moving on this. Now, it's my opinion, and not everybody agrees with me on this on our leadership team, and that's okay, but it's my opinion that the initial report doesn't have to be perfect. We may have to keep doing some of our editing after we put that out there. I think that's okay. I think it would be really unfortunate if we missed the opportunity of Singapore to get feedback on our initial report at that time. So if anybody has any comments on that, please speak up on that. And then last of all, what I want to say is that today, as we continue going through the input process, instead of doing live editing, let's make our points, and Marika's gonna keep track of those, and she will try and come back with some editing, or if you want to submit some specific wording, do that on the list, and that'll save us a lot of time and help us to make more progress. The editing we've been doing, I think, has been it's been good. I'm not sure it's productive to do it live, but it's been good. But if we keep going that route, it's going to be the meeting in Buenos Aires before we put out our initial report, and I don't think any of us want that. So let me stop there, and see if anybody has any comments or questions on that. And I'm going to need some help on the Adobe Connect because I'm still having connectivity problems. I thought I had it solved, but it's not. So others can help me on that. Are there any hands raised? I can't get in right at the moment.
This is Marika Chuck. No hands raised, just a green tick from Stephanie.
Okay. Thanks, Stephanie. I appreciate that.
I had mine up for a long time. I've just taken it down.
Did you still want to say something?
No, look, Cheryl here. I just wanted to also note that other than the green ticks, which it certainly came
from
me and Stephanie, that you have pretty much wholesale support on all of this in the chat, Chuck. So if you were able to see the chat, you know, nobody's objecting and everyone seems to be agreeing.
Thank you, Cheryl. I appreciate that. And I'll keep trying to get in while we're moving forward here. So the last thing I want to say before we go to onto the first actual agenda item is Michael, I don't know if he's on yet or not, but he said he might be a little bit late. He was on our leaders call that went a little bit overtime today, just before this, and he made a good suggestion that may be necessary come next week, where we need to kind of sync up the three processes in terms of terms used in some cases. In some cases, maybe the differences are intentional and helpful. But he volunteered with my urging to head up a small group of, I don't know, one or two other people with him and maybe staff to see if we can kind of quickly go through the three processes and see if there are any fixes that are needed so that they're not contradictory or anything. Now, one of the things I found in having the processes side by side is that in going through the input process, I would, if I found something there, I would look over at the corresponding steps in the other two. Sorry about the echo. And then I would, if appropriate, I would make the edits over in those other two also. So I encourage all of you to do that, and that'll kind of save us some time in the long run. Any questions or comments on that? Okay, let me try.
Alan has his hand up, Chuck. This is Marika.
Okay. Alan, go ahead. In fact, Marika, why don't you – is Michael back on? Okay, so Marika
– I don't see him yet on Adobe Connect.
Okay, so Marika, if you would just call on people rather than having to call on me and me call on them, that would be okay until I get this problem fixed, okay?
Okay. Alan, you're next.
Yep. Thank you. I just wanted to suggest that since there's only a limited number of people on this call, all of these things that you're suggesting we do and the guidelines of how to do them probably should be put on an email soon after this meeting.
Okay. Thanks,
and this
Alan.
Is Marika. I've tried to capture those in the notes on the right-hand side, which would go out after the call. If I've missed anything in there, do let me know.
Sorry, I hadn't looked at that side of the page. You're right. Of course you have.
But thanks for bringing that up, Alan. Chuck, that's okay because that is important.
With a subject to catch people's eye.
And just to note, Chuck, that Michael is just joining Adobe Connect. I don't know if he's on audio yet, though.
Okay. So, Michael, when you are in audio, please let us know. I don't know if you can hear this, but if somebody could put that in the chat, I'm saying I have connectivity on my laptop, but I'm not getting into Adobe Connect. So what I will do is turn the meeting over to Michael when he's able to do that, if that's possible, so that I don't hinder progress in what we're doing. In the meantime, I'll keep trying. So So our next step then, so keep in mind, if there's one or two of you that would like to work with Michael and staff in terms of doing that exercise, if it's still needed after our call next week, it'd probably just be an exercise that would be done in fairly short order. It's not a long-term effort, but having a few eyes take a look at those things, we probably won't take too long to kind of pick up things in comparing the steps of each of the processes to clean up anything that may need to be. Now, some of that may just happen naturally in the next, as people submit significant comments and edits between now and Tuesday. So,
Tara just informed me that Michael should be on audio. And Michael, can you hear us?
Yeah, I just joined in. I was going to jump in when Chuck was done, but
Michael, I'm going to let you jump in and actually chair the call at least until I can get into Adobe Connect, if that's okay.
Okay, I don't know where I am in the call, but I can help direct traffic.
We're ready now to get started on the continuing review of the input process. And Marika can give us a quick update of where we're at there.
Okay, yeah, that'll be fine. And just to underline what Chuck was saying, the idea of conforming is having put these three processes next to each other, both for ease of understanding and moving forward. I thought it would be important that we conform so that as you're looking at one, both the terms are used in the same way and the information is provided in a way that it's easy to compare the goals and the processes between these. So that's really what that exercise will entail. And as Chuck said, it may not be necessary after Tuesday. But Marika, why don't you kick us off with where we are in the input, reviewing that, and we can get started.
Yeah, this is Marika. So I think where we left off last time, and just to know that I don't think I saw any comments or edits to the first couple of sections that we reviewed, I think is section three, where, Michael, I think you made a note in brackets to whom should the request be made, I presume Genius or Council. I think that is exactly the case. So I've already in my version updated that. And I think then the point that was added by Chuck there is on the last bullet point, desired completion date and rationale. I think that's where we basically left off, or that's a new addition. And if I may put in the first question there, my question is rationale for what? The rationale for the completion date, or does it refer to something else?
Thanks, Marika. This is Chuck. Since I put that in there, let me respond. That was a rationale for why that date is desired.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Let me turn to what I've got here.
Sorry to do this to you, Michael, but
that's okay. And then the end of that, any additional information that can facilitate the work on the GIP, such as information that should be considered and or other parties that should be consulted, is encouraged to be provided as well. And I think that's good, and that's in my conformance role, that sort of conforms to the GGP language as well, I believe.
And Michael, this is Chuck. I don't know if you had jumped on and heard me, but I informed everyone that we're not going to do live editing on the call, but people make their points, and Marika's capturing those, and we'll do some some of the writing offline after the call so we can move more quickly. And if people want to submit specific wording, they can do that on the list.
Right. So I take it what we should do is simply run through these provisions and give time if anyone wants to make any specific comments or raise any questions.
Yes.
Okay. Then we're moving down to Section 4.
Amr has his hand up.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Amr, go ahead.
Thanks, Michael. Just before moving on to Section 4, following up on a comment I made last week on Section 2, the last sentence where it says, in cases where it concerns a specific request from the ICANN board or any other SOAC, the requester is expected to make available a liaison to provide further information or clarification in relation to the request for input if needed. I was thinking, since it's the GNSO Council that will actually decide if a GIP is the process that is going to be used to provide the inputs to whoever the requester may be, maybe we can change the language here. Instead of saying the requester is expected to make available, we can say the GNSO Council is expected to ask the requester to make available a liaison. Because when the requester, when an entity or a group is actually asking the GNSO for inputs, they don't know which process is going to be used. And a liaison is expected in the GGP as well. I just think it's more reasonable that GNSO is expected to ask the requester for a liaison, as opposed to a requester is expected to make her liaison available whenever they're asking the GNSO for input. Thanks.
So, looking over at the GGP, Amr, do you think that language should be adopted, that same language? Because that's basically, although that says the ICANN board is expected to make available a liaison.
Maybe I would recommend that.
Go ahead.
I'm guessing there has to be some sort of briefing in general when a request is made to the GNSO, some sort of rationale or explanation why input is being requested by the GNSO Council. But if a liaison is actually required to work along with the GNSO throughout the process, I think it's more reasonable to suggest that the GNSO Council is expected to ask the requester to make available a liaison, as opposed to the liaison is just expected to, the requester is expected to make one available. Thanks.
Okay, I see Marika's got her hand up, and I have a question, but go ahead, Marika.
This is Marika. The original language for this comes from the PDP, and I think it goes back to, you know, those cases where the board may request an issue report, where I think in those cases, I think the PDP can require or expect that the board would make available a liaison to answer any questions the GNSO Council may have in relation to such a request. I think in this case, you know, I would support what Amr is suggesting, that I think in these scenarios, in the GIP and as well as GGP, it may be requests that come from either another supporting organization or advisory committee or the board, where they may put out a general request for information or input, and there, you know, the council may decide whether or not a liaison is necessary. And in those cases, indeed, it would make sense for the council to make that request to make someone available to answer any follow-up questions the council may have. So from that perspective, I think what Amr is saying, it makes a lot of sense. And I just also wanted to know what I'll do as well, as I know we're now focusing on the input process. Any changes that we make on that side that are kind of similar in the other processes, I can go ahead and already make those changes as well, so that when people look at it, they see indeed that consistency. And in those cases where you believe that shouldn't actually be, you know, pulled through, we can maybe look at that, you know, on the mailing list, and people can flag whether the change actually should only be made in the one process and not the other. But as we said before, we're really trying to see as well to make sure that there's consistency, especially in relation to those elements that are expected to be handled in a similar manner in one process versus the other.
Right. I know Stephanie has her hand up just before I call on you, Stephanie. My question to think about is whether or not I sort of agree with that, but I wonder if who should be doing the requesting. Stephanie?
Now that's what my comment would be, and I don't want to get into the weeds of drafting, but it seems to me that it'd be nice to have parallel structures across the three columns here, the three different phases, and we just said that the requester, in cases of a specific request, the requester shall make available a liaison to provide further information. And just repeat that across the three. And then we have different structures relating to who is expected to request information or clarification. You don't need to say where you're going to get it from because we've said there shall be a liaison, but it might be useful to point out that they have a positive obligation to request advice at this phase. Does that make sense? It's the same thing happens in the third column where it says prior to the council vote. You need to specify any additional research, discussion, or outreach that is necessary. Again, a positive obligation to seek further clarification.
Right. And I guess, Stephanie, I think I would agree with you that rather than the GNSO, it's sort of if someone, be it the ICAM board or an SO or an AC, whoever is making the request, that this procedure be carried out once the GNSO Council then approves the procedure, that party should be the one who is required to actually present someone. And that's my thought would be that should be a, going back to when we were talking about the makeup of the group and trying to get it to represent the community, that certainly if someone is raising an issue that needs to be faced by either a GIP or a GGP, that party should have the obligation or be expected to provide someone who would assist in that. So
right.
That would be my brother.
Certainly the way I view it, yes.
Amr?
Thanks, Michael. This is Amr. I imagine that outside of the GNSO, and this probably doesn't apply to the ICANN board, but it might apply to other SOs and ACs, the requester may not be very familiar with GNSO processes. So they're just asking for advice or input from the GNSO on any given topic, and they're not really too concerned about how the GNSO goes about providing this input. It's up to the GNSO to decide which process it's going to use, and the GNSO and the GNSO Council are savvier with the different processes and which one is more appropriate to use. And so I would think that it's the council that sort of needs to initiate what sort of process is used and what is required in order to fulfill this process. So it makes more sense to me that it's the council that would determine that a liaison is required for a GIP or a GGP, and it would make sense to me that the council asks the requester to provide this liaison if it feels the liaison is necessary. Also, one of the reasons I think a requester shouldn't be expected to provide a liaison, because I think it's more desirable to allow any requester to make this request to the GNSO for input or guidance in whatever format they would like to use. So I wouldn't put too many rules up around how you can ask the GNSO for input or guidance, and just sort of let them ask their questions, and then the GNSO determines what process is required and what are the requirements that are necessary to fulfill these processes. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. It's Michael. So I'm clear on that, I mean, it sounds like you're suggesting that this reads something like the GNSO Council may require the ICAM board or any other SOAC that has made the request to make available, that's the way that it would work. If the GNSO Council believes that that's necessary, they should be able to do that.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, just so I understand. Marika, I think you had your hand up, and then Chuck.
This is Marika. I was actually ready putting my comments in the chat as well, because I fully agree with Amr on this point. And I think as well we need to take into account, you know, what kind of requests are typically forthcoming in relation to the process we're looking at. And I think, for example, in the case of an input process, as we, I think, discussed last week as well, that's typically kind of where people send out, you know, this goes out for public comment. And the GNSO discusses, should we be providing a public comment or not? And it can be, you know, a report from any working group, from any other SO or AC. And I think then it's really up to the GNSO to say, well, we have questions. Not actually go back to that group and ask if they can make someone available to talk to us about it. I don't think we can oblige them to make anyone available. I think it's a request we make. So I kind of like, I think, the language that Amr has suggested, that indeed it's up to the GNSO Council to identify, to, you know, do they need a liaison, are there questions, and then reach out to that group and say, hey, we have questions, I want to talk to you. I think it would be very hard to hard code in here to say, well, just watch it. If you make any requests to the GNSO, you are required to, at the same time, you know, provide us with the name of a liaison. I'm not really sure if that's going to be a very kind of constructive working relationship. So I just want to make sure that people keep that in mind, what the kind of requests are likely to be that fall under, especially the GIP category. Maybe for GGP it's different, but GIP is really the kind of where the council may just pick it up themselves, just looking at the public comment forms that have opened and say, hey, should we be doing something? And if so, well, if we have questions, let's reach out to the group and see if there's someone that is willing to give us an update or provide us with further details.
Okay, and I note, this is Michael again, I note that Amr sort of backs up what you were saying about not scaring off and making it a requirement, although in the back of my mind I'm thinking if it's important enough for them to have brought it up, it's probably important enough for them to be available to clarify it. A happy medium there. Chuck, you want to go ahead?
Thanks. And by the way, you're doing a good job, Michael, so I'm okay with you continuing if you are. So I can then participate as a participant, huh? But I wonder if we're really hung up on the word liaison. If we are, let's change it. All we're really saying here in my mind is that, hey, if you submit a request, give us a point of contact that we can go to if we have any questions. Is it really any more than that? And if the term liaison scares people off, I agree with Michael that if somebody want some information, they should at least be willing to provide a point of contact that the council could go to if they have any questions and need more clarity. So should we change it to a point of contact instead of the term liaison?
As Michael, again, for the record, I won't put that up for a vote quite yet. I will say Cheryl commented that point of contact would work on the chat. Alan, you have your hand up?
I do, but I think there's a case here that if you wait long enough, other people will say what you're going to say. my two points were, number one, if someone is asking us for input or asking the GNSO for input, I have to stop saying us now since I'm no longer there. And if they're not willing to talk about it, other than toss a piece of paper over the wall, I can put in rather crude terms what I think about it. So, yes, I think it's completely reasonable to expect some interaction. I was also going to object to the term liaison. Liaison implies an ongoing process and perhaps a bidirectional one, which is not necessarily what we're talking about here. If someone's requesting something, we may need clarification. We may need further input. We may need to bounce things off of them. We need to be able to interact. I'm happy with point of contact. In some cases, it's going to be points of contact. The whole group that we're talking to may want to meet with us. I think we need flexibility on our wording, but the expectation is completely reasonable. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Alan. And I think unless someone has something else to add, Marika, you have a sense of where we want to go, one with the GNSO Council being the requester and changing that liaison to something less scary. And if that's good, and I see Stephanie's done a check mark, why don't we move on? Unless someone has something else on two? move back to three. I'm passing through these just in case. And then why don't we get down to four? I've got to move my page down here. Which is initiation of a GNSO input process. And I'm trying, I have difficulty, so what I'm going to do is just read through this provision, and then I'm not sure which of these comments is going over there. I've got so many red, green, and blue lines. Maybe you can help me once we get through this, Marika. But initiation of a GNSO input process reads, a council vote is not required to initiate a GIP, except in the situation where one or more GNSO council members object to the initiation. In such an instance, the GNSO Council may not initiate the GIP unless an affirmative vote of a majority of the GNSO Council in favor of initiating the GIP is achieved, as set forth in blank, I'm not sure if there's a provision there, of the ICANN bylaws. And Chuck, you have your hand up?
Sure. Now, I had submitted, thanks, this is Chuck. I had submitted a comment on the input process, first of all, asking whether when we say a council member, do we mean liaisons? All we need to do is clarify. I don't think we need to spend any time on that, but we should be clear. Can a council liaison do that? If not, we could say, and maybe members of the council are different than liaison, but we should be clear there. The second thing really relates to a possible step in between three and four, and I made a separate comment on this. Would it make sense to add a step in between there that the council gets a sense, a rough sense of whether resources are available? In some cases, it's not a matter whether we should do the input process or, for that matter, a guidance process or an expedited PDP or even a PDP. If you don't have the resources to do that, you can try all you want. You're going to have trouble getting it done. So I throw that out. I'm not going to push hard on that, but I just ask whether people think a step should be added that get a general sense of whether resources are available at this time to do it. And
okay.
I'll stop there.
Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. On Chuck's last point, maybe it will make sense to actually copy the paragraph that is currently under 2 for planning of initiation of a GDP as well to the GIP, because that talks about the GNSO Council should take into full account the resources available, both volunteers and staff, on making a decision on whether or not to initiate a GDP. And I think that same, I think it goes to Chuck's point, and again, we're talking about consistent between the two, so maybe we can just move that over as well to the GIP section to cover that specific point. For what I actually had my hand raised, and I think to Chuck's point on the question on members, as I understand it, indeed, council members are those that have been elected or appointed by a nominating committee. I don't think liaisons count as such as council members, and I think that goes as well to other parts of the operating procedures where I think also talks about council members, and that doesn't apply to liaisons. They have a specific term. But I just wanted to point out that one of the specific comments that we had called out here is the in the first sentence, a council vote is not required to initiate a GIP except in a situation where one or more GNSO Council members object. And there we had put in brackets one or more. And I think our question is it sufficient for one council member to object and that would trigger a vote? Should that be, two, three? Is there any number? What is this thinking here? Or is there any firm thinking? Or is this maybe one of the items we want to flag as one of the questions where people would like to see input on as part of the initial report?
Thanks, Marika. It's Michael for the record. I guess I have a question along that line as well, and that is, let me back up. On the question of what a GNSO council member is, if that's an understood term and understood as meaning only elected, that's fine. But perhaps if we wanted full clarity, we should, one or more elected or GNSO council members or some other term that would clarify that that would not include a liaison. I don't know if that's necessary or not. Alan, I know you said something about that.
Yeah, thank you. Council members are defined in the bylaws. I'm not sure we need to define them further other than perhaps to refer to it. And I'll point out you shouldn't use the term elected. How the councillors are selected by their various stakeholder groups and constituencies is an internal matter. It may or may not be an election.
Okay, so probably if I were using that term, which I agree, I'd like not to use any term if possible, but it would be more like appointed or something.
Again, selected is the most generic term I believe we use in ICANN, which does not specify anything about what the process was behind it.
Okay, fine. My question really quickly is, it seems to me that we need to have up front of this how the council may initiate a GIP. We say that it's a vote is not required. Does that mean that a single GNSO council member can have a GIP initiated? Is that the understanding, or do we need to put in some other information here short of there being a vote? Marika, is that a new hand?
Yes, this is Marika. First of all, but I think we've already moved on, that fully agree with Alan. You know, those terms are defined and used in other parts of the operating procedures and bylaws as well, so we'll be very careful to start adding here definitions or terms that are not used anywhere else. On your question, yes, you're correct. It's anyone that can raise it, and basically the idea is if there's no objection to it or someone formally wants a vote, it would just be a kind of agreement. And as I said, that's basically kind of codifying what currently happens. Council, sees a public comment forum that's open, ask the question, should we be doing anything? Should we prepare a statement? Some volunteers say, yep, I think that's a good idea, and off they go. For those kind of things, there's typically no formal vote or formal motion required. And I think we're really trying to model this on what is the current practice and not create any new kind of burdens on a process that is really intended to be very lightweight.
Mm-hmm. So I think we need some language up front there to make that clear. Almost the council may initiate a GIP as follows. Any GNSO council member may initiate a GIP, and it might say member or members may initiate a GIP without a vote, except in the situation, and then go on with what we have. That would be my suggestion, something along those lines.
If I can just respond, I think the problem is with the term initiate, because I think that creates some formality around it, which currently doesn't exist. And I think by using the terms initiation, which have very specific meanings, especially in some of the other processes and that are closely tied to a vote, I think that's the impression we don't want to create here. And that's why it specifically says a council vote is not required to initiate a GIP, except in situations where...
Right. I'll just go back, though. I think we do have to answer the question of how you do initiate it. So if anyone has some great language for that, that would be useful. And then in the blank line there... affirmative vote of a majority of the GNSO Council in favor of initiating a GIP is achieved as set forth in. Is there a particular provision we need to drop in there, Marika?
This is Marika. I think that is the question, whether people believe there should be a certain voting threshold associated with it if it's different than a simple majority vote, which is the default for any normal standard council decisions. So I think that's, again, a question for the group. If we leave out here any kind, if we basically don't say, we now say affirmative vote, and I think it's that is, I think I need to check where that is, where it basically says that it's if it's not specified in, I think it's section 9X of the GNSO section, which has all the voting thresholds, then it's just a simple majority vote. So I think that's what we were at least suggesting, unless the group feels differently.
Okay, thank you. And before I call on Chuck, who has his hand up, my understanding of the sense of where GIP is going and what it's intended to do, that a simple majority should be sufficient for that. Once an objection is raised by any one member, and I think the language one or more is fine in that case, and down here that it would be a simple majority. Chuck, go ahead.
Thanks, Michael. I agree with you. I think let's keep this simple. It's an input process. Let's not overcomplicate it, and using the default simple majority as defined in the procedures would be fine.
Okay, thank you. I don't know if I should ask if people want to indicate their agreement to that or their disagreement. Maybe disagreement. Okay. Seeing none, I think you can use that, Marika, to make those revisions going on. Anything else on 4?
Michael, this is Chuck. Before going to 4, I just want to clarify that it's my opinion that the insertion of language from number 2 on checking the availability of resources, I think, should apply, if it's not already there, to all 3 processes, not just the 2.
Okay, thank you, Chuck. I would agree with that as well. I think it's good clarification. Okay, let's move forward. Okay, so off of 4 into 5, GIP outcomes and processes. And let's just go paragraph by paragraph, I guess, with this. Upon initiation of the GIP, the GNSO Council will form the GIP team as outlined in the GIP request. The GIP team is required to review and become familiar with the GNSO working group guidelines, if applicable, as well as this GNSO input process manual. And I just wanted to go back and look at the requests. Okay, and I guess that's the proposed GIP mechanisms that that's referring to. Comments? The next paragraph. Once formed, the GIP team is responsible for engaging in the collection of information. If deemed appropriate or helpful by the GIP team may solicit the opinions of outside advisors, experts, or other members of the public. The GIP team should carefully consider the budgetary impacts, implementability, and/or feasibility of its proposed information requests and/or subsequent recommendations. And to a certain extent, actually completely, that mimics the provision that's in the GGP as well. And then the final paragraph, the GIP team is encouraged to solicit input from each stakeholder group and constituency in the early stages of the GIP. Stakeholder groups and constituencies should be provided sufficient time to provide input from the moment that the input is requested by the GIP team, noting that in certain circumstances, such as an external deadline that affects the GIP team's ability to complete its work, this time frame may be short. And Stephanie, you have your hand up?
This is a naive question, and I apologize if I've already asked it and or if it's inappropriate, but do we have a process, and if so, what is it, for ensuring that the advice that is sought is balanced? So, you get a legal advisor. They're on the plaintiff's bar. They're on the, you know. How do you make sure that it, you get well-rounded advice?
Thank you. I'm going to let Marika, do you have an answer or a suggestion?
Yeah, this is Marika. I can just speak probably from experience in other groups. If you know, people in the working group question or have, you know, arguments why they believe certain advice may not present the full picture, that is then something that can be investigated. But I think usually when you engage experts, you know, you have to have some confidence in the fact that they are experts in their field. But of course, in those kind of circumstances, you know, should a working group have questions or the council have questions or doubts about the advice provided, there's nothing preventing them from, you know, putting it out for input or reaching out to others to, you know, confirm or you know, add to whatever is being provided.
Thanks, Marika. This is Michael again. Stephanie, I wonder, many on this call are much better versed in the working group guidelines than I, but I would have to imagine that there are within that some sort of guidelines and suggestions that that would be the hope that you're receiving full information. I don't know if we need to include that here or if that is in those materials as guidelines. Anyone has any input on either of those?
In terms of process control, it's just worthwhile flagging it at some point that there should be a check, it seems to me, because hope's great, but it springs eternal, you know?
Chuck, you've got your hand up?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. I think we have to be careful of trying to create a process for every little thing. One of the advantages of the multi-stakeholder model, and in particular the structure of the GNSO itself and the GNSO Council, is that we have quite a variety of people from different groups. And what my experience, and this is maybe the hope springs eternal, Stephanie, is that, you know, and I think this has pretty much always been the case. I don't know if it will be now that Alan's not on the council, but somebody will raise a question if there are any doubts or ask for validation. Do we need a special process for that? I suspect not. In my experience, usually what happens, people raise too many questions rather than not enough, if you get what I'm saying. Thanks.
Right, and I sort of think the following, the next paragraph sort of follows in those steps too, Chuck. This is Michael speaking. The GIP team is also encouraged to seek the input of other ICANN advisory committees and supporting organizations, if deemed relevant and as appropriate, that may have expertise, experience, or an interest in the issue under consideration in the GIP. Solicitation of opinions should be done in the early stages of the GIP. And I guess my feeling goes along with yours, Chuck. I think is that the nature of the beast is such that in seeking these opinions, if an expert is called in and provides a one-sided view, there's almost inevitably someone who will ensure that that view is balanced by other comments. And also, especially with this, the GIP, I think the less structure we impose upon it at this point, the more likely it is to be a useful tool. The next paragraph is, at the end of its deliberations, the GIP team shall develop proposed GNSO input relating to the topic for which the GIP was initiated. At the same time, the GIP team may also conclude that no input is desirable or needed. And then the final paragraph, the staff manager.
Michael.
Yeah. Oh.
Michael, this is Marika. I have my hand up.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Can I just make a suggestion, as I know we're running out of time, that, you know, maybe instead of reading through the paragraphs that no one has commented on, if we could maybe focus on those comments that are remaining in this specific process, which I think go further down, because that will help me at least to, you know, hopefully put at least the GIP in a shape where I think all comments that were made ahead of the meeting, you know, have been addressed or hopefully considered, which I may then also be able to do in the other sections, and we'll hopefully get us then to a stage where by next week, hopefully there will be few remaining issues. Just a
right,
suggestion.
And several of these are from Chuck, and actually Chuck made a comment about the GGP, which I think also would apply to the use of staff manager in the GIP. Who is the staff manager? Is that a defined term elsewhere?
Yes. That's a defined term in the as well in the PDP, and I think it is even in the bylaws.
Is that okay with you, Chuck?
Yes, I think so. Except it wouldn't hurt, because people are going to look at these things independently. Wouldn't hurt to include a footnote or something to where that's mentioned. Obviously, I'm one that's been around for a while, and I wasn't sure what it was. That's my own problem, I understand, but our own weakness, but a footnote or something would probably be a good idea.
Yeah, this is Michael. I would agree with that if there's a way of making one a quick definition and a footnote to the section, that would be really helpful. I've got room for maybe one of these other comments that's in section 7, again coming from Chuck. This is at the top of the page. Note David Olive's latest posting regarding public comment periods, where we're talking about providing a summary of public comments and responses within 2 weeks after the closing of the public comment period. Well, that's not the response of the GIP, as I understand it. That is a summary. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, the staff manager summary. Again, the staff manager comes into play. And what was that period, Chuck? Was it a larger period or less?
I don't recall. This is Chuck. I don't recall right off the top of my head, but I'm sure Marika understands what I'm asking here. David Olive, just a few weeks ago, maybe less than that, posted, I don't know if it was a blog or something, is that the comment periods are changing and so forth. And I didn't go back and look at that again, but all I'm asking there is, do the guidelines that David communicated apply to stuff like we're talking about here? If so, we need to make sure they're in sync, if that's the direction we're going. If not, then it probably doesn't matter what we put in here. So I don't know, Marika, if you know the answer to that. Do those new guidelines for comments and so forth and for input apply to things like we're talking about, or do you even know?
This is Marika. I can answer that. We actually had conversations about that in LA last week, and I think the final version of that is supposed to come out in January, our final guidelines, so we can align it with that. I know the proposal is in 2 weeks, and I think from a staff side, we've encouraged to maybe make that a little bit longer to also, you know, take into account vacation time, you know, number of comments submitted. So I think there may be some flexibility there, but we'll just make sure that it tracks whatever comes out of there and aim to have that in here as well.
And this is Chuck, and that's all I was getting at, is let's just make sure we're in sync.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've got 1 minute to go, so I think we probably have to stop before we address what I think is a really important question here, Chuck, that you bring up. I encourage everyone to take a look at this. What does include all comments mean in terms of reviewing and responding, and also the relationship of these, this statement that the GIP team is not obligated to include all comments during the comment period, including comments made by any one individual or organization, which is then followed by the expectation to deliberate. And I sort of agree with Chuck that maybe there's some reworking there. But I think we have to stop here. And next,
Michael.
Go ahead.
Just a question. Are you happy for me to maybe try and address some of these comments, either by, you know, updated wording or, you know, responding to some of the questions? Is that may help as well spur conversations on the mailing list. Would that be helpful?
I think it probably would, and it would probably be better than having, you know, three or four versions submitted by different members of the group that are conflicting with each. If you can provide some comment on that or some suggestion, and then we can respond to that, that might be a more more productive way of approaching it. And then the same with you know, Chuck's other comments, and I think Mary has a couple as well in the remainder of this.
And this is Chuck. I concur. And just as long as it's done in red line, so we can very quickly take a look at those offline and then even in the meeting next week.
Right.
Yes, absolutely. And what I'll do then as well is, because as I said, there are some specific questions that we've highlighted from the staff side. So maybe I'll pull those out as well in the email so people can maybe already have conversations around those on the mailing list. So again, you know, all in view of trying to get to a close as, you know, maybe final language for some of these by next week's meeting.
Right. Chuck, what should we plan on in terms of people thinking between now and then? Just reviewing these three as they're set forth here and be prepared to try and close it out next week?
So, again, like I said at the beginning, and you may not have been on yet, Michael, but the deadline for any significant edits or comments or questions that you have on any three of the processes should be submitted by Tuesday of next week, the day before our next call, so that we can get real close to wrapping those up. They may not be perfect yet, but so that there's enough progress that, and don't worry too much about minor edits. We want those eventually, but if you have limited time and can't do the minor edits, at least see if there's anything that jumps out so that Marika has that, all of those next week in our meeting. We can talk about them in the meeting, and then that will help her in producing an initial report by the 22nd.
Tremendous. And I'll just... to close then, anyone who might be interested in assisting after next week, looking to conform, I think we're already bringing some of these things together. If you would, on the list, let me know, and you know, we'll set that aside and talk after the session next week. So thank you very much. Sorry for stealing 3 minutes of your day, but we certainly appreciate it. And Chuck, thanks for handing me the baton, even though it was unexpected.
Well, you did a great job, and I want to thank Michael for jumping in that way. It kept it flowing where I wasn't able to do that for a while. So thank you very much, Michael, and thanks to everyone. We'll talk again on the list and in our call next week.
Great. Okay. Bye now. Thank you all.
Rebecca, if you can please stop the recording. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining, and have a great rest of your day.